7230. When a winning battle was turned into a disastrous defeat by the treacheries of some, folly of others, frustration of many, and helplessness of Imam Ali's few loyal companions, when arbitrators proved themselves real traitors to the cause of Islam, and declaring verdict against the Iraqis, when all of that had taken place, some of the companions of Imam Ali started complaining against him for having accepted the arbitration. On this and on several similar occasions, Imam Ali made them realize that it was their folly which brought that impasse. He said, "O people, till the war did not tire you out, you were obeying me and following my orders. But when it exhausted some of you, a weakness appeared in your strength and your morals, and you had not the nerves to see and realize that your enemy was on the verge of sustaining a crushing defeat. If you had continued to fight for some time more, the enemy would have been put to a disastrous rout. But you got nervous, you faltered, you lost your faith in Allah and His words, you accepted the ruse, and you lost the war. What could I do? Till you kept obeying my commands, I kept leading you from victory to victory. But when you forced me to accept your decisions, it was otherwise. Preferring this vicious world to the glories of the next, you accepted humiliation and disgrace. But it was not left in my power to help you. I could not force you to continue a war which you did not like." Sermon 214. In Basra, Imam Ali called on one of his companions, Ala bin Ziyad Harithi, who was ill. His was a very spacious and big house. Looking at the spaciousness of his house, Imam Ali said to him, "What are you going to do with such a spacious house in this world? What you really require is a spacious abode in paradise, where you are going to stay permanently. If you sincerely desire to own a house there also, like this, and as big as this one, then make this house a center of your hospitality. Treat your relatives well. Go to their help. Be particular about doing your duties and fulfilling your obligations. Then only you will achieve your aim." Hearing this, Allah requested the Imam to advise his brothers also, whose name was Asim bin Ziyad, and against whom Allah had to make a complaint. Imam Ali inquired what was wrong with him and how he was behaving. He said, "Sir, wearing a coarse woolen cloak, he has renounced this world and is leading the life of a hermit." Imam Ali replied, "Bring him to me." When he came, Imam Ali said to him, "O enemy of your own self, the devil has misled you. Do you not feel pity on your wife and children and on other members of your family? Why do you not look after them? Why do you think that Allah will get angry with you if you eat, consume, and use all those things which have been allowed by Islam and which you have earned with honest and pious means? Why renounce all that? You are living far below your standard. You will be questioned about this renunciation." Upon these remarks of Imam Ali, he replied, "O Amirul Mu'mineen, I am following your example. Look at your dress. How coarse, rough, and cheap it is. Even the poorest of us would not care to wear it. Look at your food. It is dry and stale bread without even a pinch of salt. Imam Ali said, Alas, friend, you are mistaken. You are not like me. Allah has made it incumbent upon true and just imams to keep themselves on the level of the poorest and the humblest of men, so that those poor and humble persons may not feel shame and humiliation on account of their condition, may not lose heart, may not give way to frustration and grief, and may maintain their self-respect. Sermon 215. Sulaym bin Qais Hilali, one of the companions of Imam Ali, requested the Imam to say something about those spurious and false traditions which were then prevailing so profusely. Imam Ali replied, It is absolutely within one's discretion to adopt truth or falsehood, veracity or fabrication, obliteration or abrogation, generalization or particularization, to make use of apparent meanings or create ambiguities, and to employ falsification or to report correctly. During the very lifetime of the Holy Prophet, many a false tradition was attributed to him. This continued till the Messenger of Allah got so vexed, and he stood up and declared, Whoever deliberately tells lies against me or attributes lies to me shall make a place for himself in hell. Remember that there are amongst you four kinds of narrators of traditions. One variety is of people who pretend to be what they actually are not. They are hypocrites. They manifest faith and behave like true Muslims, but they are not afraid to resort to wickedness and sin, nor are they afraid of eternal punishment. They deliberately tell lies against the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him, and his descendants. If people only know that these persons are hypocrites and liars, then the traditions narrated by them and their statements of facts will not be accepted. But these wretched impostors feign companionship of the Holy Prophet, telling that they have been with him, have heard traditions from him, and have been taught by him, and people accept them and their fraud without carefully considering their antecedents, their connections with the Holy Prophet, and the confidence and reliance of the Holy Prophet achieved by them. Allah has also warned you of such hypocrites and has apprised you of their ways and wiles. After the Holy Prophet, these hypocrites, pretending to be Muslims, remained in the Muslim society, and with the help of spurious and false traditions became leaders of schism and bosom friends of those who were trying to achieve power and wealth at the cost of peace and prosperity of Muslims and at the expense of their salvation in the next world. When these false imams and leaders obtained control of the Muslim state, they purposely appointed all those impostors who had reputation of fabricating false traditions to important posts of the state, or made them governors of the provinces, and thus gave them complete control over the lives and properties of the people, and through them carried on economic and religious exploitation of the masses. And it is a common practice that people generally try to obey, cooperate and follow their rulers, kings and rich people. The populace, therefore, were believing in them, respecting them and following their lead. There are also exceptions to this common practice, but they are only a few. May Allah protect them. The second kind of person, quoting false traditions from the Holy Prophet, is of a man who has wrongly quoted the Holy Prophet, not on purpose, but inadvertently. He had occasion to be with the Holy Prophet and to learn something from him, but owing to his weak memory, quoted the traditions falsely, and he was also not lying against the Prophet deliberately. His quoting the false tradition was under his sincere belief that he was narrating it correctly. He acts upon those traditions and says that he has heard them from the Holy Prophet. If people could only know that he was suffering from bad memory, they would give up accepting his statements. And if he could but realize his own weakness of a bad memory, he would give up quoting the Holy Prophet. Thirdly, there are persons who heard an order of the Holy Prophet and remembered it rightly, but they did not know that that particular order was later repealed and abrogated. Conversely, some people have heard the Prophet forbidding his followers a certain action, but did not know that the Messenger of Allah later gave permission for the same. In both these cases, the previous traditions were narrated by people who were not aware of the later cancellations. They not only narrated what they had heard, but also acted upon their knowledge, and the populace was misguided by them. If they had only known of the abrogation, they would not have narrated or acted upon the repealed orders or interdictions. The fourth is the kind of person who is actually a blessing among you. He is scrupulously honest and will never lie against Allah or the Holy. He fears Allah and respects the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, to such an extent that he never ascribes any falsehood to them. He carefully remembers what he has heard and then carefully narrates it, neither adding anything to it nor subtracting something from it. He learns all about the latest sayings and orders of the Holy Prophet and acts according to them. He remembers those which have been revoked and does not follow them. He can distinguish and differentiate between such orders and interdictions as are meant for special place, time, occasion, or person, and those which are meant to be general canons of Islam, and makes use of each variety in its proper place and time. Similarly, he knows those traditions whose meanings are clear and others which require very careful consideration. Orders of our Holy Prophet are of two kinds. Some are meant for special persons, while others are for all Muslims and for all times to come. There were many persons who could not fully understand the significance of what the Holy Prophet had said. They could remember it all right, but could not grasp the true relevancy of those traditions and began interpreting them as they desired. Besides that, all the companions of the Holy Prophet were not of such importance as to ask questions from the Holy Prophet. nor were they learned enough to understand and grasp what was being told to them. They often waited till some Arabs might come and ask him questions. They then listened to what the Holy Prophet replied and tried to remember those traditions as much as they could. But my condition was different. I never allowed an occasion to pass without asking a question and without requesting for explanations. These are the various reasons which caused so many spurious and false traditions to come into circulation. Sermon 216. In this sermon, Imam Ali discusses the formation of the earth, its solidification from a nebular mass, mountains, oceans, floating of continents, and gaseous envelopes around the earth. Glory be to the Almighty Allah. An example of the greatness of His might and power, and extraordinary beauty of His art of creation, is the creation of this earth itself, out of a stupendous swirling, sweeping, extremely disturbed and turbulent mass of nebulous material, which was rolling and rotating in piles upon piles. He solidified a dry and practically steady and motionless earth when compared to turbulent condition of the nebulous mass. Over this earth, He created envelopes over envelopes of gases, which are 7 in number and which are separated one from the other. These gaseous envelopes, though overlap each other, yet each one is forced to occupy its own space, as if they are fixed in their places. This solid earth is so created that it is covered by a bluish-green mass of water, and it looks as if it floats on the huge expanse of water. These deep oceans and seas are obedient to His commands, and their waves and currents move according to His decrees. On this earth, He created solid mountains and fixed them in such a way that some of them are so high that their peaks pierce the upper layers of atmosphere, and some of them have their bases planted in the deepest part of the oceans. That is, these mountains are raised higher than the surrounding lands around them, and also reach deep into the bosom of the earth. These apparently sky-strapping mountains act as pivots, and with their help, the slipping movement, floating of the continents, was brought under control. Thus, the earth, the continents, after passing through many upheavals and jolts, steadied itself into its present form. This was necessary so that the solid mass of the land may not leave its place or may not tilt, carrying into sea the inhabitants living upon it. The continents may not float towards deep oceans and may not disappear into them. Glory be to the Lord, who raised the earth high and dry above the strong turbulent seas after it had been submerged, and made this earth as comfortable and as pleasant a habitat for its inhabitants as if it was a cradle for a baby, and laid the crust of the solid land on the bosom of the fluid mass of material beneath it. It is such a crust that it is steady, and there is very little or no floating movement in it. Heavy winds pass over it and raise waters of its oceans in the form of clouds. Surely, in these there are signs, lessons, and warnings for those who fear the might and glory of the Lord. Sermon 217. O my Lord, whoever listens to our utterance, which is just, and which seeks the prosperity of the religion and the worldly life, and does not seek mischief, but rejects it after listening, then he certainly turns away from your support and desists from strengthening your religion. We make you a witness over him, and you are the greatest of all witnesses. And we make all those who inhabit your earth and your skies witness over him. Thereafter, you alone can make us needless of his support and question him for his sin. Sermon 218. All praise be to Allah, who has no equal and no peer, and who is far sublime to bear any similarity to his creatures. His attributes cannot be described. Wise men can realize and understand his existence only on account of the glory of his creation and marvels of existence and working of his universe. But on account of his supreme might and greatness, he is above comprehension and imagination. He is wise without learning anything from anywhere. He creates everything without hesitation and solicitude. No darkness can hide him, and no light can illuminate him. Neither a night can bring any change in him, nor a day can affect him. Eyes can never see him, and nobody can ever explain the reality of Allah. Allah sent the Holy Prophet accompanied by divine light, and selected him among his messengers as his most chosen and blessed messenger. He wants to dispel through this prophet disunity and confusion, and to introduce unity and brotherhood among individuals. The Holy Prophet succeeded in delivering his message. He overcame difficulties. He overthrew powerful opposition. He removed obstructions. He suppressed excesses and disallowed shortcomings and vices. And he succeeded in subjugating paganism. 219. This sermon is about Allah and the Holy Prophet and the stages of the creation of man, what is meant by protection of Allah, who are good people, how should everyone follow them. I testify that he is just and straightforward, and every action of his is based upon equity and justice, and he is such a ruler that all his orders are final, which do not require consideration and are far above appeal and repeal. I testify that the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, is his servant and messenger, and far superior to all of his creatures. From the time the progeny of Adam started dividing into branches, the ancestors of our Holy Prophet, right down to his parents, belonged to nobler and superior stock of man. In his ancestors, there was not a single man or woman who could be called retrograde or infidel. Remember that Allah created mankind to do good, to act as support to His religion, and to defend those who obey Him and follow His commands. For every occasion, when you are acting in obedience to His orders, He has arranged to defend and protect you. It is a defense which He made His prophets to declare and disclose, which strengthens your hearts and holds up your moral courage. A defense which is sufficient for those who are satisfied and are contented with the help of the Lord, and a defense which will act as a remedy for all ailments of mind for those who need such a remedy and ask for it. You must understand and realize that those servants of the Lord who are trustees and guardians of His message and of the knowledge revealed are honest and trustworthy. They freely transmit this knowledge to others. They help, love, and tolerate one another. They try to acquire as much knowledge as they can. They do not give way to doubts and skepticism. They do not resort to scandal and backbiting. These good attributes have become part of their nature. And on account of these qualities, they like to meet one another. Amongst the populace, they are so prominent as good grains mixed with bad grains. The good is utilized, and the bad is thrown away. The eminence and nobility of their character has made them more outstanding and prominent during their trials and tests. Men should try to develop such character and thus attain greatness and honor. They should fear the day of judgment before it arrives. During the few days of life which have been allotted to them, and during the little respite which is assigned to them in this world, they should make provision for the next world. They should try to change it in such a way as to acquire a better future. They should avoid remissness and negligence, and should take a careful account of themselves and their doings and sayings. They should think of the place where they would have to return, and the various stages, grave, purgatory, etc., through which they would have to pass, and should do good before it is too late. Blessed is he who has got such a noble mind and pure heart that he follows a true leader and avoids the one who will lead him to perdition, who accepts such light as will show him the way to salvation, who accepts the guidance of a person who will lead him to paradise, who accepts religion and truth before it is too late for him to accept or reject anything, and who repents of his sins and vices before death closes upon him the door of repentance. Verily, he stands on the true path to eternal bliss, which has been shown to him. Sermon 220. The supplication which Imam Ali often repeated. Through this supplication, Imam Ali has taught us how to offer our thanks to Allah, for what we have to be thankful, and how and for what to seek His protection. I thank Allah for His mercy for keeping me alive and healthy. My veins or arteries are not diseased, nor am I suffering from the effects of an immoral and vicious life. I am not childless,